Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am very excited to introduce today's guest, Catherine Johnson Rare, who is the curator of art artifacts and photos at the Kinsey Institute. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Great to join you.
So for those who are not familiar with the Kinsey Institute, just as a general overview, can you tell us a little bit about what the Kinsey Institute is and does?
Sure. The Kinsey Institute has been around for quite a while. We were founded in 1947 by Dr. Alfred Kinsey, and we're here at Indiana University, where he happened to be a biology professor. We are here to do research in the fields of sex, sexuality, gender, and reproduction. So our research team looks at a lot of different things, which is very different from our beginnings when Dr. Kinsey was focused on a research project around sexual behavior.
And many people have probably heard of his books on the sexuality of men and women that he interviewed at great length. And it was pretty revolutionary at the time and kind of blew a lot of minds.
Kinsey's first book was on men, and that was titled Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, although it was really the American male, because he didn't travel outside the country to do interviews. It was all done all across the United States over a number of years. And then 5 years later, in 1953, he published Sexual Behavior in the Human Female. And both books were very controversial, but the female volume caused him the most trouble because the idea that women were talking about their sexual lives and that they might even enjoy their sex lives was pretty shocking in 1953 to a lot of people. So he actually lost some of his funding because of the controversy over that book.
I would say that to some people it still is very controversial. I was just in a Twitter war with someone who was trying to make the same basic point that I think there's still plenty of double standard on on that right now. So the Kinsey Institute now is picking up where that left off. What sort of research is being conducted today?
Well, we're not really picking up. We've actually been continually doing sex research here since the 1940s. But today our research team really goes off in a lot of different directions depending on their interests, and it's a small group of people, but one recent study was on postpartum depression using fMRI technology. We also have a condom use team that's been working for a number of years on looking at why people dislike using condoms, how they might be more successful with their use of condoms, and how we can make them more appealing to people, since they do prevent a lot of disease and pregnancy. So we also have done studies on couples in sexual relationships, on sexual violence and aggression. And a lot of our studies, whatever the specific theme of the study is, a lot of them deal with risk and trying to understand why humans continue to put themselves in risky situations when they probably know that they're doing that, but they do it anyway.
That brings sort of a random sort of question into my head. So the research done around sexuality, how well do you feel like the findings are applied in real life? Like, when you find out something with a fair degree of certainty, especially related to a health issue like condoms and STIs, et cetera, how well do you feel like that information gets disseminated and then applied to either policy or by educators? How effective is that?
Well, there are various ways that the word gets out there. A lot of our studies, in fact, I would say all of our studies, are meant to be published, and often those appear in professional journals that are read by other people in the field. So there is a definite network for disseminating information that way. Now, that doesn't always mean that that the people who are just out in on the street are going to ever read those articles. But sometimes our studies get picked up by the news service and get published pretty broadly. You know, if it's a topic that catches the attention of the media. The problem there is that sometimes the reporting isn't quite accurate, so we try to keep a close eye on that. We have a website called Kinsey Confidential, and that is a sister website to our main Kinsey Institute website, and it gives us a way that we can put information out there for the general public. Kinsey Confidential is primarily aimed at younger people, at a college age audience, but it's certainly accessible to everybody, and I find it quite interesting when I check it out. So how a study is disseminated really depends somewhat on the study, but again, since I'm the art curator, yeah. I'm probably not the authority on that. We have a wonderful woman here named Jennifer Bass, who's our communications director, and she is really our media person. So she spends a lot of her time trying to communicate what we're discovering here and what we're doing with the media and with individuals who contact us with questions.
Very cool. How did the Kinsey Institute, a research based organization, come to have a branch devoted to art?
That's a good question that many people ask, because it may seem a little odd that we have an art collection, but it's something that goes back to the very beginnings of the Institute. By the time we were founded in 47, Dr. Kinsey spent a lot of time on the road. He began collecting sexual histories in the late 1930s, and also began acquiring things for a research library. As he went around the country, he would speak to people who had materials they might not want to keep anymore, such as photographs or magazines. And so sometimes he brought things back, he and the other people on his team, from trips for the collection. He did purchase some items. But it was really the idea that you could collect material to go along with all of the data that was being acquired through these interviews, face-to-face interviews with Americans in the mid-20th century. By collecting material from other countries and other time periods, Kinsey was able to get a sense of how sex was viewed by other people at other times, because as you know, in the 1940s and 50s, this country was not that open-minded when it came to sex, and many sexual acts were illegal. So Kinsey could find a piece of pottery from pre-Columbian Peru and discover that artists at that time were depicting sexual acts that in America in the 1940s were completely taboo. So this collection grew really out of Kinsey's desire to get a much broader understanding of sexual behavior.
So when you say that artists were unable to depict these things in the 1940s and 50s, we're still pretty sure that all these things were happening. They just weren't being depicted as publicly as they had been in the past. Would that be fair?
Well, there were definitely people producing erotic imagery. We have photographs in our collection that are quite explicit, starting from the beginning of photography in the mid-19th century, all through the 20th century. So things were around, and Kinsey started collecting them, but yeah, in the mainstream culture, there was, the idea of what appropriate sexual behavior was, it was very narrow. Really, the missionary position between a married man and woman was about what people considered to be normal sexual behavior, and then everything else was either taboo or illegal or both.
And in many ways, even that completely appropriate type of sex still wouldn't have been okay to depict. I mean, they're TV shows where they're in separate beds.
Right. In the movies from the early 30s, there was the Hays Act, which kept the cinema very chaste. So when Kinsey came along, one reason he felt that he needed to do this research was because he was teaching a course that became known as the marriage course here at Indiana University beginning in 1938. And many of his students had questions for him about all aspects of sex and reproduction. And what he discovered was that there was so much ignorance about sexual matters, and nobody had really done any extensive research on what constituted sexual behavior. So he initially started collecting data through face-to-face interviews, initially with students and then with people he met across the country, did a lot of traveling, and started developing this collection to augment the information he was getting through the interviews. So some of the first things that entered our collection were things like novelty condoms and funny items that he just picked up along the way in his travels. Also, a lot of photographs came into the collection early on because he saw that photography was a way of capturing two human beings or one human being or a group of human beings in sexual activity. And he could study that and really see what constituted sexual behavior in addition to talking to people about what they remembered about their sexual behavior. So our largest collection today is photography. We have a core photograph collection we call the documentary collection that's almost 50,000 photographs.
Wow.
And it's a fascinating collection. It begins in the 1860s and was discontinued in terms of adding to it in the early 70s. So it really spans about 100 years of photographic history and sexual history.
What are your favorite pieces that have come in through the years?
Oh, I've got a lot of favorites. It's a wonderful collection to work with. It's it's always interesting and fascinating to see what we have. I never know quite how to answer the favorite question because I have so much affection for so many things that we have. Some of my favorite pieces in the collection are the vintage photography we have from the 19th century, because even though the photographs were often made for a commercial reason, they're explicitly sexual, they were made to be sold as erotica, not as fine art. They're really beautifully made. They're excellent examples of 19th century photography as an art form. They're well lit. They're just really beautiful images. Just the content would have prevented them from being openly displayed or passed about.
What type of sexuality is being depicted in these images?
Covers the spectrum. We've got examples of groups of people engaged in various sexual behaviors. We've got homosexual images, heterosexual, masturbation. Those categories represent the different categories that Kinsey collected. That's one reason we call this archive the photographic archive, the documentary collection, because he was acquiring these photos so that he would get a greater understanding of those behaviors. But at the time they were made, they were made by photographers who remained anonymous. We don't know anything about the photographers or the models. A lot of them were made in France and then distributed to other countries from there. So a lot of the photographs that ended up in the United States or in England in the 19th century had started out in Paris or other areas of France. It's a little frustrating for researchers because they always want to know a lot of detail about an image, and we often don't really know anything about it. They came to us often from collectors who had acquired them because possibly somebody had an interest in SM, for example, and they might collect photos for their personal collection on that particular subject. And then at some point, those pieces came to us. But often the owners didn't really know much about the earlier history of these pieces.
So when you talk about the sexuality depicted in these images, including the sadomasochistic stuff, other than the technology advancements, do they differ dramatically from the sort of thing that is depicted now?
No, I don't think so. I think people have figured out things to do pretty much throughout history. And I think that is one important aspect of our collection, is that we can have images from previous centuries on our wall in an exhibit, and then a student who's maybe 20 years old here at IU can walk through the exhibit and see that these same behaviors that maybe seem kind of new and different today are actually things that people have done for millennia.
Nice. So right now you have a new exhibition running through April 5th. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I'm really excited about this show, and I wish everyone could come to Bloomington, Indiana to see it. It's called Naked Spaces, Architecture and Art from the Kinsey Institute Collection. And it's really a fascinating exhibit that takes a very different approach to our collection. You know, this material was all put together by Kinsey, and then since his death in 56, we've continued to add to it, but with the idea that it's meant to represent different aspects of sexuality, of sex, gender, and reproduction. And we've always collected pretty broadly, but when we decided to take a look at it from the perspective of architecture, I really wasn't sure how much material we'd find. And as it turns out, it's probably one of the biggest shows we've ever done. you know, it's a very international show, and pretty much people around the world usually live in some kind of building. And we, construct our spaces through architecture. So it makes sense that architectural imagery would show up in a lot of the artwork that we have. Even though the focus might be on a couple having sex in the foreground, sometimes there's a temple or just some sort of architectural structure in the background as a setting.
So what are some of the key pieces that people should definitely check out have people have been reacting to a lot?
Well, it's such an interesting mix of material. I think people find it really fascinating to see that, because we have some Renaissance prints. We have some pieces from the 18th century. We have modern photography and artwork. We've got a few books, a sculpture. It's a very mixed media, which I think makes it more interesting. I'm trying to think if there are any particular ones that have caught people's eye. We have a Spencer Tunick photograph. He's a contemporary photographer who assembles a large group of models for a shoot that he's doing, and then he poses them all in the nude, but there's so many of them. It's really a fascinating way of using the human body in photography. But the particular photograph we have, all of the people in the photograph are posed on the balconies of a Miami hotel, and they're all popping the tops off bottles of champagne. So there's this spray of champagne visible in the photograph, along with all of these naked figures. And that is actually the one piece that is not from our permanent collection. We're borrowing that from a sex researcher here at Indiana University who works with us and who offered to let us have that piece for a few months for this show.
Champagne and naked people. I can't see any possible sexual symbolism there.
Yes.
Very innocent.
But everything else is from our permanent collection, which is pretty exciting because there are well over 100 pieces in the show.
Very cool. So how often do you get new exhibits and things that people should check out that they wouldn't have been able to see before?
We do about 5 or 6 shows a year. Unfortunately for many people, they're here in Bloomington, and I realize not everybody can come here to see a show.
Road trip!
You're right. I think it's worth it. What we do to compensate for that is that we put a lot of our shows on our website as online exhibits. We usually can't fit in every piece from a show, but at least somebody visiting the online show will get some sense of what was in the exhibit and what it was about. And we'll probably do that with this architecture show. Right now we have over 12 online exhibits, so that's one way of allowing people to enjoy what we're doing here and get a sense of our resources, even though they may not be able to come to Indiana.
So where would be the place to look if somebody wanted to find out more about either the art and artifacts or the Kinsey Institute in general? Where could we get more information?
Well, our main website is kinseyinstitute.org, and that is where we have a lot of information about the collections as well as research, and also links to other resources. So that's a great place to start. Then we also have our other site, Kinsey Confidential. We're quite active on Twitter. We have over 100,000 Twitter followers, which we're really thrilled to see. And then we also have a Facebook account. So both those places are great for finding out what we're up to, what's happening right now. If we have a new research project out ready for people to talk about, we'll announce that on Twitter and Facebook if we have a new show. So really, we'd love to have more followers in both those places.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank Catherine Johnson Rare very much for your time and all this interesting information and putting sexuality and history in perspective. Very much appreciated. Thank you for being on today.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, so thank you everyone for listening, and make a road trip to Bloomington, Indiana. There's probably a lot of other cool stuff out there. There's some other cool stuff in Indiana, right?
Yeah, it's a very pretty place too. But probably not so much in the winter, but spring and fall is beautiful here.
Yeah. Well, people have till April 5th to come check this out, so they'll wait till it's a little bit warmer, and then they'll come on out, and it'll be lovely. All right, so thank you very much, Catherine, and thank you everyone for listening, and have a great day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.